speak on this topic of overcoming negative emotions, the second part. In the first part, I spoke about these four levels of education or explanation to understand where negative emotions come from. Then experimentation to understand how we are different from the mind that is the source of the emotions. Then evaluation, learning to evaluate which thoughts to pay attention to, which not. And lastly, elevation. Now, to further elaborate on these two stages of evaluation and elevation, I'll talk about two broad approaches which we often have to deal with our emotions, and a third approach which is healthier. So let's take an emotion such as anger. Somebody does something which just infuriates us. Now there are two broad responses we could have. We just express the anger. Now when we express the anger, quite often we speak things that hurt the other person and that we ourselves regret. Since my childhood, I was quite short-tempered, and I had friends who were even more short-tempered than me. So one of my friends, when he would get angry, he would speak such things that others would, their hearts would be shattered. So once his friend, at whom he was yelling, he just quietly started recording everything that he had spoken. And then he just replayed what he had spoken, and he was shocked. He said, "I spoke this. I can't believe this." So the ancient Greeks had a saying that anger is like temporary insanity. So when our emotions come within us and we express them in a completely unfiltered, unprocessed way, then often that doesn't reflect who we are. Sometimes people say, I just be myself. It is good to be ourselves. But to be ourselves means that we want to be the best that we can be. If, say now, a musical performance is going on there, if somebody without any practice comes up on the screen, comes up on the stage, and he starts, "I'll be myself," and they start practice playing some music, they'll not be able to play well. So being yourself means, yes, we need to train ourselves. So expressing emotions in an unfiltered way is not necessarily self-expression, because it may just be expressing our worst self, our lowest self. On the other hand, sometimes when we are angry, we might repress our anger. That's the other extreme. Repression also doesn't work for long, because what is buried within will come out eventually. And often the way it works is that if we get angry with one person, we repress it. Second person, we repress it. Third person, we repress it. We may repress it for 10 people with 10 incidents. And then the 11th person just does something small which annoys us. And then the accumulated anger from the previous 10 people vents out. And we all may have this experience. We just say something to someone, you know, "Can you just pick up the trash?" And they explode. "What did I do? I just made a simple request." But what has happened is they were repressing the emotion, and then it came out. So both expressing emotions and repressing emotions are unhealthy. Because expressing hurts others, repressing hurts us. And eventually it comes out and we hurt someone else who just happens to be a victim. So sometimes it happens that if somebody who is more powerful than us has hurt us, then we repress the emotion over there, but then it comes out against somebody who is weaker than us. And that's how we could have a tradition of abuse going on. Somebody abuses somebody else, and that person can't abuse back the person who is more powerful. So they abuse somebody who is younger to them, weaker than them. And it just becomes tragic as well as horrific. So we need a balanced approach in between expressing and repressing emotions. That is processing emotions. So processing means that we acknowledge the presence of the emotion, and then we focus on moving forward in a constructive direction. So I'll talk about this in terms of three E's: acceptance, aspiration, and analysis. So acceptance means that when we have a particular emotion, we can't live in denial of that emotion. When we have a particular situation, if we keep denying or resenting that situation, that drains us. Our emotions, we can compare to some extent to the weather. The weather refers to the physical situation around us. If we understand this three-level reality, body, mind, and soul. So just as in the bodily situation around us, the weather changes. And its change affects us. But still, we are different from that weather. Now, it's very cold. We accept that it is cold. If we keep resenting, why is it cold? That's of no use. So just as we accept our environmental weather, similarly, we need to accept our emotional weather. That means just as the environment sometimes changes unpredictably, similarly, our emotions may also change unpredictably. Two people get attracted to each other and they feel, oh, I'm in love with you. Now, that is one emotion, attraction. And relationship scientists, they say that generally romance has a bench life between 9 months to 18 months. What that means is that initially these hormones get secreted and we feel attracted to someone. So at that time, the two people may be ready to fight against the whole world. They say, I can't live without you. And they fight against the whole world. But after some time, as the hormonal excitement starts going down, then we start seeing the negativities in the other person. And those same people may say, after a few months, I can't live with you. The complete opposite. So these are emotions which will arise. Sometimes we feel attracted to someone, sometimes we feel averse to someone. If the weather alone became the basis of our actions, if we have a job, say today it's very cold, I won't come for my job. If we did that, then we would not be able to keep any job. So just as we accept the weather, it's cold, but then I prepare myself and move on. So similarly, sometimes we feel attracted to someone, we feel averse to someone. So that we can't deny the weather. Similarly, we can't deny our emotion. But just because the emotion is present doesn't mean that emotion has to determine our action. The emotion is one factor. It's like the weather is one important factor. But it is one factor in our decision of how to move on. So acceptance simply means that this situation and this emotion are there within me. If the unpalatable situation that might be there, which is triggering a negative emotion, if we keep resenting that, then that dissipates our energy. Resentment of reality often hurts more than reality. Resentment of reality often hurts more than reality. And acceptance is what can minimize that hurt. Say, we were to go for an outing, a picnic, a trek with all our friends. And just the night before that trek, we get a flu. And we are on bed with no energy to go anywhere. Now, having a flu is uncomfortable. It's not unbearable. Okay, we feel weak, we need to take a lot of tired, depressed, might feel a little feverish, but it's not unbearable. However, if we start resenting, the mind, the inner screen, I mentioned, starts, why did this have to happen to me? All my friends are enjoying that trick, I'm lying on this wretched bed. Life is so unfair. And as we start resenting what has happened to us, that resentment will hurt us more than the flu. The flu is simply uncomfortable, but the resentment makes our situation feel unbearable. So acceptance simply means that we acknowledge, this is how it has happened, I accept it. We often resist accepting situations because we feel that will make us powerless. This is unfair. This is not how it should be. We all have, when we go into any situation in life, we go in with some expectations. And when those expectations are frustrated, at that time, we feel disturbed. However, our expectations and the situation, the two are not intrinsically tied to each other. The two can be separated. So, I'll give an example for what I mean. The point which I'm making here is, acceptance we often think of as disempowering, as passive. Why should I accept this? It's unfair. But I'm giving analysis to explain how acceptance can empower us. Suppose we learned rowing and then we wanted to exhibit to our friends, loved ones, how nicely we row. So we have got a boat, we've got oars, and we want to exhibit the rowing in the sea. And as we go into the boat and as we start rowing, we plan how elegantly to move our hands in a symmetric, harmonious way and let the boat move smoothly. So we have a mental picture, expectation. Our boat will just go smoothly and people will applaud. And as we go into that, see, suddenly a monster wave comes over there. And the wave is so huge and so strong that it just knocks us over completely. And we are outside the boat and the oars have slipped out of our hands. Now, if at that time, if we keep moving our hands as if rowing, all that will happen is we'll sink, we'll drown. So now, when the situation has changed so dramatically, we need to deal with the situation. Yes, we may not be very deep into the ocean. We can swim and get back to the coast to safety. But if we are still resenting, why was my plan shattered? And he said, no, still I want to execute my plan. Still I want to row. But there is no oars and there is no boat. So our expectation of reality can sometimes come in the way of our dealing with reality. And the expectation that I will row this so smoothly. But Now when the reality is changed, so I am here, the expectation is here, the reality is here. Expectation is not bad. Expectation can help us to shape the situation. This is what I want. This is how I want to do things. That can inspire us to practice diligently, to become an expert in that field, whatever we are doing. So expectation can help us to shape the reality in a desirable way. In that sense, it's not bad. But what is bad, or what can be disempowering, is the attachment to the expectation when the reality has changed. So, the greater the difference between the reality and the expectation, the greater is our frustration. And, say normally if somebody is rowing on a boat and they knock it off, it's troubling, it's annoying, but you just get to the coast. But if you had this dream, and at that time this happens, it's embarrassing, it's mortifying, it's even more frustrating. But when that happens, we can't go along with our scripted plan to accept that the reality has changed. Okay, how do I deal with my reality? So acceptance doesn't mean abandoning our plan. It doesn't mean simply being passive with respect to whatever has happened. It just means acknowledging that this is how things are. Now we can work to change the things also. We can plan, okay, next day I'll come and next day I will do this exhibition of my skills. That's fine. But right now, I have to deal with the situation as it is. So a lot of negative emotions come because of the reluctance to accept the reality. Once there is acceptance, then a significant amount of negative emotions go down. So as long as I am dealing with the frustrated expectation, this is how it should be and this is how it is. Why is it like this? Why is it like this, not like this? That negative emotion is what disempowers us. But if I accept it is like this, say we got a job and we expected the job to be like a particular way, but then the boss turns out to be too demanding, too domineering. Okay, as long as we are resenting it, we can't function. We may later decide, okay, this is what I want to do. I'm not going to continue in this job later. I may change the job later. I'll talk about how to act as the last part. But acceptance simply means that we stop wasting our mental energy on that which is unchangeable. And that internal act of, okay, this has happened, I accept it. That itself will decrease our emotional temperature. It will not solve the problem, but it will help in preventing the aggravation of the problem. So, accepting the situation helps us to move ahead. And for moving ahead, that's the second part, that is aspiration. Aspiration means, what is it that I aspire for in life? What is it that is really important in my life? So, generally, say if we are, we drove here today morning from Chicago. So it was a two-hour drive. Now, if there's a lot of traffic along the way, sometimes we're just going for a casual ride and then there's too much traffic. We say, okay, I was going to see that park, but I'll go some other time. So if something is not very important for us, we just said, I don't want to do it. But if something is important, then, okay, this traffic is very heavy today. Let me see if there's some other route to move. So we can't change the traffic. So acceptance simply means that I accept that the traffic is bad. But aspiration means it shifts our focus. Where do I want to go? And how can I get there? So for all of us, there are things which are very important. There are things which are somewhat important. There are things which are of minor importance. And this hierarchy of importance, which is there for all of us, this gets lost if we are not clear about what is our aspiration, what is most important for us. So the nature of emotions is that the emotions distort our perception. They make us lose a sense of proportion. So small things require a small response. Big things require a big response. But when we become emotional, small thing may lead to a big response. So if I'm clear, what is my aspiration? What is it that is most important in my life? What is it that matters the most to me? So acceptance is not about simply being passive. It is about keeping small things small so that we can focus on the big things. So this, if going back to the earlier situation, whereas we were rowing. Now, what was my aspiration? My aspiration, was it that I want to become a skilled rower? That I can still do. I have learned and I can still do. I couldn't exhibit on this occasion, but I've already become my practice a skilled rower. Or was it that I wanted appreciation from my friends, my social circle of what I was doing? Okay, if that is what I wanted, then, okay, I didn't get it this way. Is there some other way I can get it? Do I need to do something else? Or can I do this again? A common metaphor in the Bhakti Yoga tradition is of a river. How the river moves steadily towards the ocean. Now, the river moves steadily, but the river doesn't move smoothly. Because along the path of the river, there can be many obstacles. So sometimes if there is a big mountain, the river can't erode that mountain. The river finds a way this way. It may go left, it may go right, or it might just sometimes go underground and then emerge as a spring later. Or the river might just persist and wear out the obstacle. Just as the river keeps moving towards the ocean, the river is not attached to the path. The river is attached to the purpose, we could say. Okay, if this path gets blocked, then okay, we'll turn around. If you look at the history of rivers, many rivers have changed paths quite dramatically. And sometimes whole civilizations can go down if a river suddenly changes their path. And a new civilization can emerge somewhere else when the river changes its path. So like that, our aspiration is about that which is the most important for us. When we focus on that, then acceptance becomes easier. All of us have different aspirations in our life of what we want to do. Another word for aspiration could be purpose. We are not afraid of pain per se. What we are afraid of is pointless pain, purposeless pain. We're walking along a road and suddenly some thorn pricks us, then we are barefoot. And that will annoy us. But suppose a thorn or a nail has pricked us and then we go to a doctor and the doctor gives us an injection. Now, the sensation is more or less the same. Something is pricking our body. But in the second case, we voluntarily go there. And we may even pay the doctor to give us the injection. So the pain itself is not what we resent. The pain, it is pointless pain. Why did this thorn have to go in my leg? So similarly, when we face negativity in our life, it is the negativity will trouble us much more if we don't have any purpose. If, okay, this is my purpose, I can't go this way, I'll find this way to move forwards. So often, when obstacles come in our life, that is an opportunity to go deeper inwards, to understand what is really important for me. Say we are in a relationship and we experience a rejection, a breakup. Okay, what did I really want by this relationship? So often when we are moving through life, we have a certain set of goals which society may have set for us. Okay, now you should be good looking, you should be wealthy, you should be like this, you should be like that. Now, those may not be what is most important for us. So if we are not clear about our aspiration, then the negative emotions that are caused by small problems, they will overwhelm us so much that they will stop us from doing what is much more important for us. We all will experience, if we are doing something very important, say if you are going for an important meeting and you are driving and somebody cuts across. Now, across our road, that's annoying. But if you know, I have to go for this meeting, yes, okay, it happened, let me move on towards. So, A, it's a vital positive aspect for dealing with negative emotions is the aspiration. To have be clear about what it is that is most important for me. The third part I talked about is analysis. Analysis simply means that in our life, there are some things which we can change, some things which we can't change. And while this seems common sense, but if we can analyze in the situation, okay, what can I change? What can I not change? Often, our negative emotions come because we are obsessing on that which we can't change. That which we can't change. And when I was one, I got polio in my leg. And I was born in India. My parents had given vaccination to me when I was small. But somehow, the doctor who had been in charge of that vaccination, he did not keep the vaccine properly. So the vaccine became defective and it had a counterproductive effect. The vaccine, instead of protecting me from polio, the vaccine gave me the polio. So when that happened, my parents were, I don't remember any of this, my parents told me about all this. But my parents were naturally heartbroken. But as I grew up, I didn't realize what a blessing I had in the form of my parents. Till I grew much older, I came into my teens, and then, or almost into my 20s, when first I went to a association of physically handicapped people, of specially abled people, and I was asked to give a talk over there. And then after that, I was talking with other people who were also having polio or some leg issues, some physical handicap. And then one thing struck me was that many of them were still fighting battles that were already lost. That means there's maybe it was 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, still they were resenting why that handicap had happened to them. Why they were not, they had lost a limb. Why they couldn't have a properly functional body. So then I looked back and thought that I don't remember in my life resenting this. It's a fact of my life. I had to use crutches for walking. But it's just a fact. Just like I had to use spectacles for seeing, I use crutches for walking. Crutches are a little more unusual than spectacles. But we don't keep thinking of our spectacles all the time. So I hardly think of the crutches. So I went back in my life and I looked back and I realized that it was because my parents accepted me as I was. So I was also able to accept myself as I was. So when my parents would meet some of my relatives or family or acquaintances. Or sometimes when the child has a special disability, there might be some pity, some sympathy, some kind of expression of sorrow about it. Since my childhood, I was a good student, used to do well in my exams. So my parents, whenever somebody would speak about this, he says, my parents would tell me that. Tell me and tell them, I would overhear, he says. Now, whatever he doesn't have in physical ability, he has more than that in intellectual ability. So that just give me a focus on not doing so much physical activities. I couldn't do my sports. But I would love to read books, study, speak, write. And I was able to develop myself in that direction. This is where I'm talking about analysis. Analysis means that in our life, there are certain battles which are already lost. That doesn't mean everything is lost. So analysis basically is putting the previous two together, acceptance and aspiration. So, okay, this particular situation, whenever anything negative emotion is coming, the negative emotion becomes worse when we focus on the things that are not in our control. And we can get a sense of power and purpose if we focus on that which is in our control. So analyzing, okay, this is what is in my control right now and what is not in my control. If we just ask ourselves these two questions, what is in my control? That helps us, okay. At this stage, say some, like going back to the earlier example of suddenly somebody getting flu when they were planning to go for a trek. What is in my control? Okay, my own consciousness right now. What I think about, what I focus on, that is in my control. So, at all times in our life, our consciousness is always in our control. Our circumstances may not be in our control. But we can begin with inside out, with consciousness. But this analysis is, it's simple, but it is powerful. Okay, what is in my control right now? By default, our culture today makes us believe that we are meant to be the controllers. As compared to say 50 or 100 or 200 years ago, we have much more control over things than earlier through technology. If the weather becomes bad, we can just use some heating or air conditioning and we can make things comfortable. If we are feeling bored, we can just turn on television and we can watch and stimulate ourselves. So, as technology has increased our capacity to control things, it has also created within us the conception that we are controllers. And that's why when we are not able to control things, it becomes unbearable. But if we understand that technology may have increased our control in some ways, but still, everything is never in our control. And somehow, we because of social pressure or social expectations, sometimes we think that if I am not able to control things, then something is wrong with me. I did a little study about success and failure. How it is perceived in over the centuries, 18th century, 19th century, 20th century, 20th century, 21st century. So it is from the middle of the 20th century or early start of the first half of the 20th century that failure is seen as, previously failure was just seen as a bump on the road of life. But for many people today, failure is seen as the end of the road of life. Failure is just an event in our life. But when we think of ourselves as controllers, then failure becomes the end of our life. Failure becomes the definition of a person. This person is a failure. No, nobody is a failure. Failure might be an event that we experience in our life. So here I'm talking about the analysis means there is something always in our control. But if we identify that I am meant to control the situation, I am meant to control this relationship, I am meant to control this person, then we just can't and we get frustrated. If we are parents and then we want our children to grow up in a particular way. So there's I think Mark Twain who said that when I was 15, my father was a fool. Now I am 25 and I am amazed how much the old guy has learned in 10 years. Now, it is not that the father may also have learned, but it is just that the way people think at 15, the way people think at 25 is different. So if as a parent we think that I have to be able to control my children, if I can't control them, if I think I am a failure because of that, that's not true. The child has his own free will and they can act in a particular way which may be different from what we want. That doesn't make us a failure. So analysis means, okay, what is in my control right now? And I'll conclude with the last part, that is act. So if we focus on what is in our control, then we can create positivity even in the negative situation. There are three things that are always in our control. I refer to an acronym TAB. If in a computer, say some horror movie is going on or something unwanted is going on, we can always just open a new tab and we can see something else. So TAB is TAB, thoughts, attitude and behavior. That means when something bad has happened to me, what do I think about? That is in my control. If I keep thinking about why did this bad thing happen to me, why did this happen to me, that will simply disempower me. So if I was going for a trek and I'm now bedridden, so I can keep thinking about what everybody else is doing and feel sorry for myself. Or I can think of something else. Maybe I can read a book. So what we think about is always in our control. This doesn't mean that we deny the problem. Sometimes we need to think about a problem to solve it. But sometimes we need to stop thinking about the problem to solve it. Because we just keep thinking about the problem and the problem seems to become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So life determines our problems, but we determine the size of those problems. So if we understand that what I think about is in my control, always. And in fact, our spiritual practice is meant to give us an unchanging spiritual object to think about. So ultimately, when we practice yoga, when we do kirtans, in kirtan, we sing sacred sounds. These are centered on the supreme spiritual reality, the infinite consciousness, known by different names in different traditions. So we know in our Bhakti Yoga tradition, we know him at infinite by the name Krishna. So if we train ourselves to think of higher spiritual reality, of Krishna, of the infinite consciousness, then that will give us some strength, some solace. Because that what we think about is in our control. And the purpose of meditation, the purpose of spiritual practices, is to make our mind attached to thinking of spiritual reality. The more we practice meditation, the more we become, it becomes easier for us to think about higher truths. And I talked earlier about elevation. So by our thinking, we can elevate ourselves. That's now A is attitude. That means that whatever situation has happened in our life, we can't control that situation, but we can control our attitude towards that situation. I can see the same situation as a problem, or I can see the same situation as a growth opportunity. Suppose we had to carry a huge weight. Somebody told us, you know, carry this bag for me. Now, because of social obligation or whatever, we can't say no. But we might resent carrying that big bag. But we might go to a gym and there we might lift similar weights. The action is the same. There, if somebody asks us to carry a weight, we would resent it. We would ask someone to, we would expect something in return for that. We go to a gym, we actually pay the gym so that we get weights to lift. So the attitude is in our control. And if we understand that there is a higher plan, a higher purpose to life, by which actually whatever happens is ultimately for our growth. That bad things may happen in our life, But even through those bad things, good will eventually emerge. So if we have that, then rather than focusing on the negative, we can look for the positive within it. We can't be grateful for all situations, but we can be grateful in all situations. I can't be grateful for all situations. If somebody gets a terrible sickness, can't be grateful. It's difficult to be grateful for the sickness, but I can be grateful that I've got good health insurance. I can be grateful that this disease has a cure. I can be grateful that I have a friend circle who is ready to support me emotionally, practically. So we can change our attitude by looking at the positive amidst the negative. And that attitude can make a huge difference. And the last part is behavior. We can't control the situation, but we can control our behavior. How we act in our life is up to us. Now, I'm a part of the Bhakti Yoga tradition, and this Bhakti Yoga tradition was brought to the West by many teachers. A prominent teacher was Swami Prabhupada. When he came to America, he came at the age of 69, and he had at that time no followers, no institutional support, practically no contacts in America, and he had just 40 rupees with him, which is in today's currency less than a dollar. And he came all alone, and while he was coming, the only thing he had, you could say, was the resource was his body, and he got two heart attacks on the ship. He didn't even have money to take a flight. He came by a cargo ship in which somebody gave him free passage. So at that time, you could say everything was negative. He was alone, he was penniless, he had got a heart attack. But he had that faith that there is a higher plan. And he prayed, "Oh Lord, whatever you want, let it happen." He prayed that, "I am a puppet in the hands of the divine. However you want to make me dance, make me dance." So rather than looking at the situation, which was all negative, he looked at the higher plan. And there was indeed a higher plan. He came to America in 1965, and within 10 years, he had ended up establishing 108 temples of spiritual learning across the world. He traveled the world 14 times. He had written over 70 books. He inspired millions of people to grow spiritually, to learn about their own spiritual strength and move forwards in life. So that his behavior, his action was that at that time, okay, what is not in my control is not in my control. But a mood of service and contribution was what helped him to move on. Yes, in this situation, how can I serve others? How can I contribute to their spiritual well-being? He took small, small micro steps. Sometimes in our life, we are going along a particular path and suddenly the light goes off. It's completely dark. We may temporarily curse or rant, but if we turn on our flashlight of our phone, the flashlight won't show the whole light, but it will show one step ahead. We take that one step, it can show the next step ahead. And like that, we can cover a significant distance. So this, the attitude of service and contribution, that we are here for a purpose and we can serve, we can contribute. So if we focus on that, that will become like that light. The flashlight. When things go wrong, when it's dark, we turn on the flashlight. How can I serve in this situation? How can I contribute in this situation? Rather than resenting, why is it not like this? Why has the light gone off? Okay, what can I do? We'll find that we will be able to take small, small steps forward, and eventually the lights will come back and a better reality will emerge for us. So that way, I put it, I said that whatever life may get us to, our spirituality will get us through. Whatever life may get us to, our spirituality will get us through. I'll summarize. I spoke on this theme of overcoming negative emotions, second part. Instead of expressing or repressing our emotions, we process them. And in processing, I talked about four parts. First was acceptance. That when bad things happen, as long as we are resenting the reality, that resentment hurts us more than the reality itself. So acceptance means that we stop fighting battles that are already lost. Acceptance is not passivity, because there are certain things which are more important for us, and that brings us to aspiration. We have to do introspection to find out what is it that is most important for us. There is a path and there is a purpose. Just like a river has a purpose to get to the ocean. But sometimes in a particular path is blocked, the river finds another purpose, another way to get to the ocean. So if we become too attached to our expectations, think this is how things have to work out, this is the path my life has to take, and when that doesn't happen, we get depressed. But if you focus not on the path but on the purpose, what is my aspiration in life, then we will find some other path to move on. Then I talked about analysis, wherein I talked about how I was able to accept my polio because my parents accepted it. And I was able to focus my energy not on resenting my physical inability, but on developing my intellectual ability. So we have been brought up to believe that everything is in our control, but there are things which are not in our control, there are things in our control. By analysis, we focus on what is in our control and then we act positively. So PAB was the last part. What we think about, what attitude we have towards our situation, and how we behave in the situations is in our control. And by focusing on this tab, opening a new tab in our life, whatever life may get us to, our spirituality will get us through. Thank you very much.
Thank you.